Hi, I'm Doug Gordon. Welcome back to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio. S.A. Cosby is one of the most distinctive crime fiction writers working today. His second novel, Blacktop Wasteland, won numerous awards and rave reviews. His third novel, Razorblade Tears, was a New York Times bestseller and recommended on Barack Obama's summer reading list. Sean returns to the South for his novel, All the Sinners Bleed, and it could well be his finest work yet. Stephen King offered Sinners a rave review in the New York Times. The protagonist is Titus Crown. He's the first black sheriff in a small town in Virginia. After Cosby's Razorblade Tears was released in 2021, Sean wanted to address police violence in the black community. So he started working on a story called Black as Sackcloth.
Originally, Black as Sackcloth, which became All the Sinners Bleed, was going to be a examination of police corruption, police violence, and brutality in America, using a small town setting as a microcosm for that. But I learned rather quickly that I didn't have enough distance emotionally from that issue to really write about it effectively. I sort of switched gears, and that book morphed into All the Sinners Bleed, which is a more, I think, nuanced examination of small town life in relation to religion and race and class. And I think overall it's a better book. But I also felt significant pressure that I put on myself from the incredible response to Razorblade Tears. Blacktop Wasteland came out, and that, you know, really got a great reaction from folks. But Razorblade Tears was a different animal. It really changed my life. And I really was stacking the bricks on myself to try to replicate a success. Eventually, after about 6 months, I had a conversation with a fellow writer named Eric Pruitt, who gave me some really good advice. And he said to me, he said, you know, whatever you're working on doesn't have to be as good as Razorblade Tears. It just has to be good. And I think that sort of baseline gave me a new way to appreciate what I was working on. And it really opened up the floodgates for me. And I was able to really dig into the book and find the story I wanted to tell.
Mm-hmm. And I understand that you realized when you were having this conversation that you realized that you hadn't written deeply about religion. And so you decided that religion was going to be a big part of All the Sinners Bleed. Can you talk about that, how you wanted to go in deep into religion in this book?
Yeah, so I have paid short shrift to religion in my earlier books. Most of my books are about outlaws. There are brief mentions of religion and brief mentions of mortality and existentialism in my books, but this was the book where I really wanted to lean into it and discuss it. My mother was very religious growing up. I lost her a few years ago. And so this book was sort of a way for me to sort of reconcile my own tenuous agnostic feelings about religion, while also acknowledging both the positive aspects of religion in a small southern town and the negative aspects. You know, religion can be a comfort and it can be a cudgel. It can be used to bring people together and it can be used to manipulate people and tear them apart. And I wanted to sort of embrace and talk about all those aspects. I'm not anti-religious by any stretch of the imagination, but I am anti-hypocrisy. I am anti-manipulation. And so for me, the idea of religion is not bound to any organized hierarchy. I think you can be a spiritual person without being a religious person. I think you can be a spiritual person without believing in supernatural. You know, trees and nature and a running river can be spiritual. So I kind of want to explore that through Titus and his own struggle with religion in the book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'm very sorry for the loss of your mother. Yeah, you mentioned Titus. He's your protagonist, Sheriff Titus Crown. Can you tell us a bit about him?
Yeah, I think he's an interesting character, but I don't know if we would be friends because we have several different ideas about the way the world works. But having said that, I believe he is a strong, moral, upright person who has a strong moral code. He's not perfect, and he has his own flaws and faults, but he is someone who, when the darkness arises in his town, he doesn't avert his eyes. He stands in the gap between the light and the dark to protect his town, protect the people he loves. And I think You know, that's all we can ask of heroes, of our protagonists, is they don't have to be perfect, but they have to stand up when it's time for them to stand up. I really came to love Titus as a character. I admire his intelligence. I admire his determination. I understand his flaws and his faults. He's a character that I think resonated with me in a way differently than my other characters. You know, I'd love to have a beer with Bug from Blacktop Wasteland. I'd love to hang out and have a drink with Ike and Buddy Lee, but I would depend on Titus if I needed help. I think that's what kind of sets him apart from my other characters.
Yeah. I can see why you would say that. Yeah, Titus is a great character. I really found him very fascinating. And I'm someone who I wish I could be more like in terms of bravery and things like that. So definitely you did a great job with that character. You use a very powerful inciting incident to kick off your story. Can you tell us about it?
The incident that starts the book is there's a shooting at a local high school. And unlike shootings that we're more unfortunately familiar with, this isn't a mass shooting. One person is killed, a beloved teacher, and that teacher is killed by a former student. And then the former student is confronted by Titus's deputies and Titus. And as he tries to de-escalate the situation, unfortunately, that student is killed as well. And I use that because I know what I wanted to do, and I hope I achieved it. And what I wanted to do was to show how we have become desensitized to horrific event on top of horrific event. And so in the beginning of the book, the school shooting happens, and that's, you know, takes up everybody's mind and everybody's concern. And then after the school shooting, Titus and his investigation discovers that the teacher and the student and a third person were involved in a series of terrible crimes. And fairly quickly, people move on to the serial murder. And it's almost as if they forget about the school shooting and the children and what they're going to deal with and the PTS and the trauma and everything that's around it. And that's done deliberately because I wanted to talk about and show how, unfortunately, as a country, we become so desensitized that we just move to the next tragedy. But characters like Titus don't forget about that school shooting. They don't forget about the horrible events. In fact, it weighs on him deeply throughout the rest of the book. And so it was sort of a narrative technique that I wanted to show how quickly we just move on, unfortunately.
One of the most powerful aspects of your writing is the way you support people who are oppressed. In fact, you describe crime fiction as the gospel of the dispossessed. How so?
I firmly believe that crime fiction is the best prism through which we examine our human existence, existentialism, our desires, our wants, our needs. Because I think, for me, any book that shows people at their most desperate, shows people at their most vulnerable, is a crime novel. You know, one of my favorite books of all time is 1,000 Acres by Jane Smiley. And there's murder, there's violence, there's assault in that book. I mean, it's considered a literary classic, and it is. But ultimately, it's also a crime novel. The Secret History by Donna Tartt, another one of my favorite books of all time, is a magnificent examination of privilege and class, but it also has a crime at the heart of it. And so I think ever since, you know, Cain slew Abel, crime has driven our stories, crime has driven our narratives, and crime is the way that we view our human existence at its, both at its worst and at its best. And for me, when I say it's the gospel of the dispossessed, I'm reminded of a Dennis Lehane quote that crime and noir is not stories of Icarus falling from the heavens. It's stories of people falling from the curb into the gutter. And those are the stories that I want to tell. Those are the stories that I think resonate the most.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Stephen King gave All the Sinners Bleed a great review in the New York Times, and he said this is a book filled with carefully controlled anger. How challenging was it for you to control your anger while you were writing your novel? Or first of all, I should ask, were you angry while you were writing the novel?
I was, and I think I used Titus as the avatar for that rage. And I think what I was angry most about is just the inequality and unfairness of society. You know, I grew up in a small town, and I know how wonderful that can be, and I know how claustrophobic that can be. And so I know how you can be judged by your name, not by your individual characteristics. And also I know how unfair the law can be. You know, one of Titus's more naive qualities is he really wants to fix things in the police department. He ran on the basis of trying to make sure that the police department treated everyone more equitable. He has this desire, this belief that if he just treats everyone equal under the law, then he can mete out justice with equanimity. And I believe that's very difficult because a lot of times justice system in America is inherently unequal. And so it made me really examine my own anger with that, but also what are the answers to that problem? How do we fix it? I don't know if I answered that question in the book, but I know Titus is definitely trying to ask the questions. And through him, I was able to sort of use that rage and that anger and that frustration to drive the narrative. And there are moments where Titus, you can see it just bubbling under the surface, how angry he is, how frustrated he is, and also how alone he is, because he's not Gary Cooper in High Noon, but he definitely has some of those aspects where he's the one man standing against this torrent, this tidal wave of darkness. And so he was really a great way for me to express some of my own frustrations.
Mm. How did reading this very positive review from Stephen King hit you?
It was wonderful. It was, you know, I was at a book conference in New York when the review came out. You know, I had turned my phone off when I was on a panel. And when the panel was ended, I turned my phone back on and I was actually just scrolling through my phone trying to find a place for lunch. And the review popped up. And, you know, it moved me. I'm not ashamed to say I cried a little bit because, you know, not only is a review from one of the great writers, great American writers of all time, which I don't think he gets enough credit for that. But it's also someone I have a very deep personal connection to as a reader. My aunt, when I was a little kid, would give me all her Stephen King novels when she was done reading them. So she'd hand me these dog-eared paperbacks. And I remember those great paperback covers from the 70s and 80s that she would give me. And my mother was a big Stephen King fan. There's this sort of shared consciousness when you're a Stephen King fan, and that he writes literary work for the masses, I think. For a poor young black kid from the rural South, I understood, you know, Maine. I understood Castle Rock. You know, I knew Bangor, and I understood Salem's Lot. And I knew guys like, you know, Ben Mears. And so to see that writer that I had such a connection with as a child, as a young man, as an adult, not only read my book and know who I am, but also really enjoy it and really give me such a positive response. It really moved me. It's something I'll never forget.
That's great. Yeah. What's next for S.A. Cosby?
Yeah. So I have a couple projects coming out and I'm really excited about. One, I had the opportunity to write an 8-episode audio drama for Audible called Broke Down Prophets. It's a crime story as a road trip. I'm currently working on my next novel, tentatively titled King of Ashes, which is about three siblings and their father who own a crematory, and the youngest sibling runs afoul of some criminal types and he is in debt. And so in an order to sort of assuage this debt, the oldest sibling makes a deal with the criminals that they can use the crematory at their leisure to get rid of their enemies. He also finds that he enjoys being a criminal. And so that has ramifications for the entire family. And in the future, I have plans to maybe return or revisit. You know, it's funny. I usually write standalones. I've always been known for standalones. I haven't written any series. But recently, talking to people about the reaction to Titus, I don't know. We may see Titus again. He's really
excellent.
I don't know if he's done saying what he has to say.
No, I don't think he'll ever be done. Looking forward to that, the return of Titus Crown. Sean Cosby, thank you very much for joining us today. Congratulations on All the Sinners Bleed. We're looking forward to reading King of Ashes and listening to Broke Down Prophets.
Thank you so much for having me again. I really appreciate it.
S.A. Cosby is the author of All the Sinners Bleed. Find out more at WPR.org/beta. Well, that does it for this edition of Beta. Thanks to our guests, Eddie Muller, Warren Zanes, and S.A. Cosby.
What you're gleaning from these interviews is groundbreaking.
Beta is available to follow on Spotify or wherever you catch your favorite pods. Don't forget to offer a rating or to share with new alphas. And you can keep up with us during the week online at WPR.org/beta.
Even for the internet, it's pretty shocking.
Beta is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Red Meat Productions.
Fantastic.
Our music and technical director is Steve Gotcher.
Cocktail? Cocktail. I think I'll try one of those things.
Our executive producer is Adam Friedrich.
Are you packing, dear?
Yes, darling. I'm just putting away this liquor.
And thanks to you, our alphas. More Beta comes your way next week. Until then, I'm Doug Gordon.
I'm sorry we couldn't have the drink. Perhaps some other time.